to the program. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. It's Friday night, end of the week. We made it. Lots to talk about. I want to address San Bernardino because it's been 1 year since the attacks. Never, I think, before in such a way have we experienced terrorism here at home. And I want to talk about it and some of the absolute insane stuff that the media has been saying about it in the last few days. Not just the media, but law enforcement, too. But before I do that, let's briefly talk a little bit here about Secretary of Defense pick, James Mattis. Now, if you're wondering, look, I know what's being said out there about Mattis, that he's a bit of a crazy man. You've probably even had some people talk about his quotes, some of these things that he said, and I'm going to go through some of those too. And you're thinking, what is this all about? Well, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you why this is such a great tactical move and what message this sends to the world. One thing you have to realize, first of all, Mattis, what's his background? He's Marine general. And the Marines, if you don't know anything about the military, I'll tell you, the Marines are just, they are bad A money monies, okay? That's who they are. The joke is, you know, if you need something done, you call the Marines. And we've got a Marine veteran here in the studio. In fact, he's here tonight. Chris, am I right about that? Yeah, he's nodding his head. There it is. Confirmed by a real... And they also say, once a Marine, always a Marine, right? I was in court today, and the judge looks like Andrew Jackson, first of all. He was smiling straight from a $20 bill. But... He's a former Marine, and every Marine that you meet, and especially in law, you know, a lot of former Marines who become lawyers and judges, and you see them, they are just tough as nails, ramrod straight, just straight shooters, good people. So I've always loved Marines, but Mattis is a Marine's Marine. In fact, when there started to be some rumors swirling about Mattis being picked as Secretary of Defense, I talked to a friend of mine from undergrad who was a Marine and had served over in Camp Pendleton, and then we'd gone to some night classes together. And he's a lawyer now in Virginia, and I reached out to him and I said, "Well, what do you think of this Mattis pick?" And he said, "Let me put it to you this way: if Mattis quit today and set up a moon colony and sent out a letter, basically put out a press release saying, I'm opening up a moon colony and I need some people to come with me." He said probably about 80 to 90% of current enlisted Marines and even retired Marines would stop whatever they're doing and join him. That's the amount of loyalty that Mattis has. And I'll explain to you, I think it's important to understand, to get to the point of why he's a good pick and why he's a brilliant tactical move on Trump's part to serve as Secretary of Defense. There's a great piece in The Federalist today, and it was reprinted from Strategy Bridge. But it's a guy, Stanley Kaur, and he was an officer in the Marines, and he talks about his certain contacts that he had with Mattis, both as when he was still a colonel and then later when he was a major general. And so one thing is, he says that the guy is extremely intellectual. I've read somewhere that he has something like over 7,000 books in his personal library. Think about that, 7,000 books. But he's been described as this warrior monk, but what it really is is that he's big on trying to win the fight without fighting. So he wants to cause confusion among his opponents, and he's perfectly happy. You get certain military people who, whenever, you know, they say, when you say, like, if you're a hammer, every problem you face is a nail. You know that expression? So you get a military guy, and And no disrespect, but you know, but when you have artillery behind you, that's the hammer. So your every problem is you try to. There's some military people who will solve everything with war, with confrontation, with violent confrontation. And the fear, of course, among us civilians is, well, look, I mean, you know, war really should be a matter of last resort. Well, what he writes here is this guy, the Stanley Corps guy, who served under Mattis for several years and had, you know, certainly multiple meetings with him, but describes these three encounters. One of them that I thought was really fascinating to me, as a manager of people, I'm telling you, this is brilliant. So he has this meeting with Mattis back when he was still a colonel. So this is back in 1994. And the guy, the author of the piece, is talking about Mattis. He was just a captain. So he's coming in to meet his commander. And he says Mattis called for him. He brings the guy in the office. He offers to get him a coffee. Now, Chris, you know, you're a military guy. Is that normal? Does your commanding officer say, hey, can I get you a coffee? Can I? Welcome to my office. Hey, can I, you know, box of tissues? Anything? Banana? Nut mix? Anything? No, not usual. Okay. And then guess what he does? He gets out of his chair that's behind his desk. You know, it's like an office. You know, so there's a chair and a desk. And he says, hey, no, I want you to sit down in my chair. And the author's like, no, I was like protesting. I don't want to. No, please, sir, sit. No, please. No, sit in my chair. And then he pulls up a little side chair. Are you picturing this? Okay. And then what he does is he literally takes his phone off the hook. And then they proceed to have a conversation that lasts an hour and a half. And Mattis lays out his philosophy, his vision for warfare, what he intends to do with the unit, and how the 7th Marines, which is the unit that they're in, how he intends to use them in battle. And the best part about it is, right, so obviously this made a tremendous lasting impression on the guy, but the tremendous thing about it is that many years later, he writes, when the 7th Marines got into that fight, he was proven precisely right. And that's just it. This is a guy who's able to have vision. He's able to inspire his subordinates. He's able to lead. He's obviously willing to listen. He's willing to lay things out. He's clearly a great manager. And he's somebody who can oversee all of the armed forces. There's a great quote. So everybody's saying all of his funny quotes, right? But this is one of the quotes where if you're worried, if you are maybe thinking, God, well, the last thing that we need is a warrior mindset in our Secretary of Defense. We're tired with all the wars. We're done. Thank you, Obama. Thank you, Bush. We want peace. And if that's what you're thinking, I don't disagree with you, actually. But I'm telling you, don't be worried about this Mattis guy. Here's a great quote of his. And this is a list of compiled quotes that's in Business Insider. Was published, I think, yesterday. The author is Paul Scholdra. But here's a quote. This is Mattis. In this, and he's talking to his troops. This is about 2 or 3 years ago. In this age, meaning our era, right, that we're in, I don't care how tactically or operationally brilliant you are. And he's talking to his subordinates here. If you cannot create harmony, right? Interesting choice of words. Even vicious harmony on the battlefield based on trust across service lines, across coalition and national lines, across civilian and military lines, like, you know, between soldiers and the civilians. You need to go home because your leadership is obsolete. We have got to have officers who can create harmony across all those lines. It's powerful stuff. Now, I'll tell you the thing that you want. In any confrontation, I talked about this all the time where I say, you know, when it comes to a negotiation, and everything in life is a negotiation, trust me. I mean, if you're in any relationship, if you're a married man, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Just kidding. Anyway, I don't want to get in trouble. But everything's a negotiation. At work, at home, all of our interactions on some level are a negotiation. And what matters is what position of strength you come from on things. And what we want to do, what I think Trump laid out in his campaign and in a series of, you know, in his rallies and different things where he would say, look, We're losing. We got generals that are just announcing, here's what we're going to do, and here's what we're going to do. And we're giving up the fight. And we're not taking it to ISIS. By picking Mattis to lead, essentially be the head of the armed forces, he's signaling that he's willing to do anything he can. He's willing to go scorched earth to get the job done. This is one of the Mattis quotes that I love. I come in peace. I didn't bring all artillery, but I'm pleading with you with tears in my eyes. And he's talking to some, this is from the same list as earlier. He's talking to some Iraqi generals here. This was in Afghanistan, excuse me. If you F with me, I will kill you all. Now, this is an interesting quote because, again, he's saying, look, if I'm, don't, you know, I'm willing, please, I come in peace. I want peace. But you cross that line and I am going to obliterate you. And that is what our foreign policy has to be. Look, if we want safety, back to that negotiation I was talking about. If we want to have a winning negotiation, if we want to win, what do we have to do? We have to make the other side think that we are going to stop at nothing. Nothing. And that takes you've got to have the right person with the right determination, with the right ability to get things done. And that's Mattis. People fear him. And he's well-respected in the world. And he was well-respected in Afghanistan, well-respected in Iraq. One example of this comes from, again, from that piece in The Federalist I was talking about. There's a great instance. You know when they were preparing the Iraqi invasion? Mattis was there. You know what they did? Do you know that in the desert in Kuwait, they created a mock-up? They created a mock-up on a scaled version of the Iraqi battlefield where the battle was going to take place. And they went to detail. I mean, Mattis had his people actually, you know, put out rivers, like paint the sand and create an exact replica of what it was going to look like. And then Mattis gets up there. He's got a microphone, a bull, you know, whatever it is, giant loud amplifier. And he's talking to all of his men out there. And he goes through it for 30 minutes, no notes, no anything, just every nuance and detail of how that battle was going to go. And he mastered it. He just had it all right there in his head. And so this guy who writes, the author of this piece, says, you know, at the end of the drill, you know, people are asking questions and Mattis dismisses everyone. And this guy, Mike Murdoch, one of the company commanders of the British Armed Forces, he leans over to the author and he says, "Mate, are all your generals that good?" And he goes, "No, he is the best we have." So there it is. He's inspired. Even other coalition partners, right? Even other outside people, foreign people, understand that this is a guy. This is a force majeure, for sure. So. Do you remember, by the way, in Israel when Ariel Sharon became prime minister? Interestingly enough, you know, he was called the bulldozer. Mattis is the mad dog, right? But Ariel Sharon, do you remember this? And he ended up getting a stroke, unfortunately. But people had so much hope that he could bring peace because he was the one person with the credibility, the established credibility as a war hero. But here, you know, the good thing is Mattis isn't here to be president or to be prime minister like Ariel Sharon was. He's here to lead and to rebuild our military. And I'm a firm believer. I always have been that you have peace through strength. If you can stand up there and credibly claim that if you cross that line, you are dead. And we mean it. Well, I mean, who really wants to cross that line? That is how you achieve peace. So if you cannot tell, I'm actually very encouraged by this selection, and I think it's a great move because, like we discussed, And I had this conversation. We had it here in the studio, didn't we? Before the pick was made, we talked about Mattis and the pros and cons of Mattis, and we roundly agreed that by picking someone who had the ability, right, the imprimis to install fear in our opponents, that we would be willing to stop at nothing, that was our best chance of actually achieving our military objectives and getting some peace in our time. So there it is. All right, I have more quotes that I'll pick. I got some of my favorite quotes of Mattis's that I want to share right when we get back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
The phone lines are open now.
Right now?
Right now.
At 800-ABC-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Be polite, be professional, but have a plan to kill everybody you meet. General Mattis. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. So, this is the list of quotes that were published at Business Insider yesterday. And some of these are you've probably heard before. My favorite one here is really actually a funny one, if you think about it. The most important 6 inches on the battlefield is between your ears. Think about that. Words to live by. Speaking of words, the media just had a cow over how Trump announced this. Have a listen to the announcement and tell me what you think. Here we go.
We are going to appoint Mad Dog Mattis as our Secretary of Defense. But we're not announcing it till Monday, so don't tell anybody.
And of course, the media just, oh my goodness, this is just not professional. This is an unbecoming of the presidency. Anyway, absolutely hilarious. And he was speaking at a rally. Where was he? Was he in Ohio? Do we have that? Anyway, you know, he's doing this tour, Trump is, traveling through the states that brought him all of his necessary electoral votes. And he's back to doing his rallies. And the press is scratching their heads saying, well, when is he finally going to stop acting like a goof and actually begin acting presidential? But this way of communicating with the public worked for him. It's the same as a Twitter thing. Why would he take what worked for him in his campaign and move away from it? And it's interesting. If you go back in history, you know, when they talked about FDR, you know, when FDR did his fireside chats, it was actually there got a lot of criticism for talking directly to the that's just not presidential. You don't do that. So times are a changing. But I don't think Trump should abandon these. If this worked for him, if this way of communicating and connecting with the public worked for him, he should keep it up. Okay, now. Another thing that you're hearing all about in the media is this whole 7-year deal. You know, because here's how there's a federal law that says that in order for someone to serve as Secretary of Defense, their 7 years must have elapsed from the last time that they served as an active duty. Okay, so the idea is you want to have some separation. Because the Secretary of Defense job is a civilian's job, and it's not like the Joint Chief of Staff, where you have a military leader in that position. It's really meant to be somebody who has oversight over the armed forces, and is preferably, I guess, preferably a civilian, or who has some distance, who hasn't worked side by side or under or with the people that are currently leading the armed forces. Now, I'm just curious here. You've got a guy who roundly, by the way, this pick, I think, is roundly applauded, and even by some people who are more hostile to Trump. And in conservative circles, I can tell you, I can speak for my people. In conservative circles, people are just ecstatic over this pick. So you're telling me that there's doubt that a Republican House and a Republican Senate won't draft a quickie exception for Secretary of Defense Mattis's appointment? Yeah, that's going to happen. It's going to happen like snap fast. Guaranteed. There's no way anyone on Capitol Hill, I mean, even Democrats aren't going to want to get in the way of this. You know, maybe some anti-war people and some kooky left fringe types. But I'm telling you, nobody's going to want to get within an inch of this because of opposing it. Because nobody wants to own this failing. So, well, all right, we're up against the clock again. John Wolfe is next with the news, and also I do want to get to the San Bernardino thing because some of this stuff just needs to be talked about. We need to get to this. So, next segment, let's do that. Talk about San Bernardino. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. If you are a bleeding heart liberal and are crying yourself to sleep every night, thinking, you know, hoping that January 20th doesn't come, save your money. You're going to need it for that one-way airfare to Canada. You're going to need, I'm pretty sure that visa application is going to cost you. So don't send it to Jill Stein or Hillary Clinton. It's a total scam.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
It's almost unbelievable that it's been 1 year since the San Bernardino attack. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Why am I talking, besides it being an anniversary, why am I talking about this now, about something that's happened a year ago? I'll tell you why. I can't even talk about Ohio. That happened a week ago, but apparently we don't have enough information, so I can't talk about it. Don't want to be drawing any conclusions, right? I mean, how many times you try talking to people about that? Well, Sam, you know, really, we don't have enough facts yet. So just, can you please just hold, we know what you think, okay? Just hold on to your horses. Okay. I got my whole team of stallions holding. And in San Bernardino, we've been holding for a year, and this, at least according to the geniuses at the LA Times, is what we have thus far. I'll start with the headline. I don't have any word yet if this is fake news or not. We may never know why the San Bernardino terrorists targeted a Christmas party. This is the LA Times. Not the Onion. Are you kidding me? Okay, you want to try this one on for size? Because they were Islamic terrorists. You've seen this all over, right? It's all about this Christmas party nonsense. This Christmas party nonsense. And this, play the tape of what the, well, hold on. Let me tell you, let's set it up here. Getting ahead of myself. Slow down, Sam. The San Bernardino police chief, Jared Bergwan, went on this ABC News special, Heroes of San Bernardino. And he's talking about the two shooters, right? You had Saeed Rizwan Farouk and then his wife, Tashfeen Malik. And apparently, I thought he was the one that worked for San Bernardino, but apparently she, 1 year prior to the shootings, had somehow been in the same conference room had seen that it was decorated for Christmas and was triggered. That's right. She was triggered, just like a snowflake, triggered by what she saw, and ended up posting some nasty messages online about how it's just unconscionable that a Muslim be forced to endure the indignity of attending a meeting in a room that's decorated for Christmas. And here's what the police chief says about it. Roll the tape.
She had essentially made the statement in an online account that she didn't think that a Muslim should have to participate in a non-Muslim holiday or event. And you could clearly see from pictures inside that room that there was somewhat of a festive atmosphere. So it had those Christmas overtones to it. That really is one of the very, very few pieces of potential evidence that we have that we can truly point to and say that possibly is a motive in this case.
You're a moron. I don't know what else to tell you. This is a person that's investigating this crime. Well, presumably the FBI is taking a lead. But can I? This is the only bits of evidence that we have. Are you kidding? Do you know how much stuff was on? Oh, how about the part where they pledged of allegiance to ISIS right before the attack? Oh, that's not evidence? This is what I am talking about over and over again until I'm blue in the face and you know I'm right. People are so afraid to call it what it is that they're falling over themselves to come up with these other reasons. Oh, there was a, what did that guy say, that Bergwan guy? There was a clearly from the photographs, there was a festive atmosphere. Oh my gosh, how dare... See, how dare they? How dare they decorate their office for Christmas? I mean, are you for real? So when I come back, I want to. Well, I'm gonna have a. We gotta talk about Sweet James when I come back. So just bear with me. We're gonna deviate a little bit and have some fun. But I want to get back to this. Because this is, you cannot solve the problem, you cannot fix the issue, if you cannot call the problem and identify the problem for what it is. And it comes down to radical Islam, plain and simple, and it's serious, and it's deadly, and more people will get hurt if we continue with this stupidity of dancing around this. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
This is Sweet James Bergener. I listen to Sam Nation.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch.
Yes, exactly.
You're a
that Mr. Grinch, we all know who he is. And they know who he is in Huntsville, Alabama. That's right. A beloved pet charity was on their way to a Christmas parade. They had just made a Who's of Whoville float. Only problem is it was made of paper and hay. And some Grinch driving by flicked his cigarette into the float deliberately, causing it to burn to the ground. Really, who does that? Let me tell you, people are doing lots of stupid stuff on the road, and it's not just Grinches burning down Christmas floats for pet charities. People putting on makeup, eating food, playing with themselves, who knows what, but they're causing accidents. And if they cause an accident where you get hurt, there's only one thing you need to do, and that is call Sweet James Bergener. That's right. You don't talk to their insurance company. You don't talk to them. You don't, nothing. Just you call Sweet James and make sure that your rights are protected. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. Or visit sweetjames.com. All right, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC. And tonight, on the anniversary of the San Bernardino attack, I'm kind of getting just am mystified at the inability or unwillingness, I should say, of the media, and especially, I think more alarmingly, of law enforcement personnel to identify the cause of the attack. They've had a whole year to figure it out, and this dummy, Bergwan, over at the police chief of San Bernardino is saying it's all because, well, I don't know, Tashveen Malik, the wife of Saeed Rizwan Farooq, was offended by the fact that there were Christmas decorations. Oh my gosh! So it's all just a fault of Christmas. You think it's just the LA Times. The Washington Post, same thing. 1 year after the San Bernardino attack, police offer a possible motive as questions still linger. A possible motive, yeah. So I picked this up and I think, oh, goody, we're going to have something here about radical Islam. Oh, no. It's all about this Christmas party. Yeah, so, and it talks about, yeah, so they're talking about the Christmas party again, how she was pissed off that there was a Christmas party. Yeah, Malik had said online she didn't think that a Muslim should have to participate in a non-Muslim holiday. And that's Bergwan, talking about Bergwan again. It's really one of the very, very few pieces of potential evidence that we have. And then never mind. Then in the next paragraph, okay, they talk about how both Farooq and his wife had a longstanding interest in potential violence. And they go back. They have this on their, these dumb, you know what's, we're writing this all over social media. You know, I'm going to give you a little editorial aside here. And just humor me. You know, when the media mocks Trump and they say, you know, wow, what's this extreme vetting you're talking about? Okay, here's one for you. If you're like this Malik cat and you want to, yeah, this lady, you know, she emigrated. Where did she come from? Well, she married Saeed Rizwan Farooq. They kind of met online in some, you know, terrorist brides, you know, exchange. So she's coming from one of the countries that's on the list. And so she applies for, you know, she applies for her visa to come over. And here's, I mean, I'm just going to throw this out there. Here's a wild thing. Here's what extreme vetting could potentially consist of. Why don't we look at their social media? That's for starters. Hey, I'm just throwing it out there. But oh no. In the past administration, you know, 8 years of dummy Obama, can't call it what it, oh, that's just, you can't do that. You know what? Can't do it. Didn't do it. Wouldn't do it. So that's why, you know, and they, you know, the best part is, and this isn't Bergwan talking, by the way, it's Comey, remember him? FBI Director James Comey said, and this was last year, he said, hey, you know, before the couple got married, Malik came to the United States to two exchange messages online showing signs in their communication of their joint commitment to jihad and to martyrdom. Okay, you're doing that, and it's all because of a Christmas party? You kiss my you-know-what. What a load of crap. Guess what Bill Maher said about this after everything happened? I'm going to share that with you right when we get back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. It's my job to be cynical. I think that the people in the room are all smart enough to play with us.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
All right, Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC, talking to you 1 year after the attack in San Bernardino, a terrorist attack. And talking about all these idiots who are trying to explain it away using any other possible explanation that is not Islamic terror. And I think the important reason to set it straight and to tie it back to the religion and the radicalization that the religion causes is because you've got to understand the problem. And also I can't think of anything. I don't know. I can't think of anything more offensive to the victims of this attack to be lied to in this fashion. I really cannot even imagine what it's like for these families to listen to this nonsense knowing full well exactly what it was that had happened. So, about 2 weeks after the attack, of course, now you think of my opinions, I'm alt-right, you know, crazy guy over here, you know, spewing these radical ideas about Islam. Here is what Bill Maher, who, by the way, is not alt-right, in case you were wondering, what he said about 2 weeks after the San Bernardino attack, and listen closely to this.
After the San Bernardino attacks, we were off the next week, but I heard all over TV, everybody was saying, you know, if only Americans knew more about Islam, they wouldn't be so afraid. Actually, it's the reverse.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say it, but the more you know, the more you would be afraid.
Think about that. Something I've said here before. And I'll tell you what's more here, and I always like to take it back to the primary source. So if the most commonly told lie, I'll call it that, the lie, is that it's, you hear Obama say this all the time, you know, it's a distortion of the religion. Well, you tell me about this. Now, I've looked through this. You can go on Quran.com. You pull up this. Now, I'll tell you this straight from the Quran. You tell me what you think of this. This is they're surahs and verses. So it's 3:151, surah and verse. Quote, soon shall we cast terror into the hearts of the unbelievers, for that they joined companions with Allah, for which he had sent no authority. Cast terror into the hearts of unbelievers. Quran 8:12, I will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve. Therefore, strike off their heads and strike off every fingertip of them. I mean, think about this. Quran 5:33, it says in part, murdered, okay, that Allah and his messenger strive for to make mischief in the land, is only this, that they shall be murdered or crucified, or their hands and their feet should be cut off on opposite sides. I mean, it's terrible stuff. So I bring this up only to say is that it's not a question of this religion being manipulated, okay, or, you know, distorted. It's a question that this religion potentially radicalizes people because it is frightening if practiced to the letter of the law. And that makes it different from Christianity and other religions. It just does. Because you don't have things like this in the Bible. You just don't. So it's something to think about. And you cannot take this attack that happened in San Bernardino and blame it on a Christmas party. Because at the end of the day, this is the reason. This is the cause. And they say as much in their posts when they pledge of allegiance to ISIS. All right, we're back here on Monday. Have a great weekend. Talk to you soon. Sam Rajofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC.